Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
How are you tonight?
I'm good. So I have a caller that had their hand up. Caller, if you still want to ask the question about guest Laquan Murphy before I get started, and your last four digits or your number is 6996. Do you have a question or comment before we start?
No, I'm sorry. I want to hear it first.
Okay, darling. That's okay. And when you do want to ask a question, raise your hand. Now, when we talk about Patriots, some people think we're talking about January the 6th, the insurrection on the Capitol. We are not talking about the Proud Boys. We're talking about real-life heroes, patriots, people who have served time in the military, people who have served as police officers in New York City, people who have been there and mentored and taught people how to learn martial arts. That's what I call a real-life hero. But the story don't end there because this person is also an actor. He is also what you call armorer, a person who takes care of weapons on the set. He also has a production company. This guy is phenomenal. So without any further ado, I want to introduce our special guest tonight, Naquan Murphy. How are you?
I'm good, and yourself? Thank you. Thank you.
I'm good. I'm so glad to have you here tonight because, oh, my God, your credits are so long. We're going to highlight some things. But, man, you have done a lot in your lifetime. So I know that you started off in martial arts. How old were you before you got into that? And what groomed you for martial arts?
Well, I actually started, I was 11 years old when I started in martial arts. And that was in 1970. And I'm still going strong, still doing it.
All right. Well, what kind of degree do you have in martial arts? Like, I know that, you know, different kind of belts and degrees, like black belt, first degree, whatever. I'm not really down with that because anybody who know me, I don't do that. So what degree, since you've been doing it so long, do you have in the martial arts? What's your title?
Well, I am a 10th degree black belt.
What degree?
And my title, my 10th degree.
Oh, wow. The front door.
Degree.
That's awesome. 10th degree. Woo, woo, woo.
I hold the title of Daisoke, which means inheritor. I inherited the system founded by my instructor when he passed away. So I'm one of the inheritors for that, along with a couple others. But, yeah, I am a 10th degree black belt for Kuroshido system, which is Karate Aki Jiu-Jitsu. And, you know.
Wow.
I do a little something.
Something. I wouldn't want to mess with you. Yeah. You know, and I'm going to say this quick before I switch it to Chris. Now, I know you live in New York, and I've been to New York a lot of times. And to me, New York is a little scary because I remember when I went there when I was young, I saw people having their boom boxes, attached to their arm, you know. Like, I said, is it that serious? And so New York always kind of scared me because there's just so many different elements, and, you know, people, they just don't play there. You know, I'm kind of like, you know, mellow, but they, like, in your face with whatever they're thinking, you know. So, did you have to use that martial arts ever to defend yourself, not teaching, to defend yourself on the street?
Oh, yeah, plenty of times. Especially back in the days in the 70s, oh, definitely. And throughout, you know, not as much in the later years, but, you know, it has come up where I've had to do a little something. Yeah.
I sure would like to see that because I remember coming up to school and Bruce Lee was all over the movies and stuff, and everybody went to the Bruce Lee, and the females, we was all going to say, what they always Oriental guys knew how to do it, but some of them say they don't know how to do it just because Oriental don't mean you know how to do martial arts, but that's cool. I'm going to let Chris ask his next question. Chris, go ahead, darling.
Okay. Naquan, prior to joining the martial arts, did anyone influence your decision to want to work in the field?
What, to be in martial arts?
Yeah, to be in it.
Well, you know what? As a kid, you know, like a lot of people, you, you know, you see things like, for example, Green Hornet was like the television show back in the day when I was growing up. And, you know, of course, I saw Kato Bruce Lee. And I'm like, wow, I want to do that because, you know, I thought that was cool. You know, so that was kind of like my introduction, if you will. And then, you know, I just kind of pursued it from there, you know. But it was, and then, you know, I actually started meeting martial artists and, you know, and then decided, you know, kept bugging my father and my mom. Hey, I want to do this. I want to do that. And finally they took me to a school. And that's just history, as the saying goes.
Mm.
You know, it's become a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, when did you decide to go into the military? And let me just say right now, thank you for serving our country.
Yes.
No, my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you. I went in 1976 and to active from 1976 to 80. And, you know, I was in the United States Army. And I, you know, it was something that I wanted to do. I had a lot of family members who served in the military, you know. So it was, mm-hmm. I guess it was kind of DNA, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things that, you know, I just wanted to do. I mean, I actually, before I went into the Army, I actually was, you know, I applied to multiple colleges and so forth. And I got accepted to quite a few colleges and even got a couple free rides. But I actually just, I wanted to go to the military. And the funny thing was, while I was in the military, I went to college while I was in the military. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, they had, because on most Army posts, they had satellite college campuses and so forth. So between whatever you're doing, you can jump in there and go. So that's what I did, you know.
Okay.
But just fun, something to do.
Yeah. Well, when you got out the military, you became a New York City cop. And how long did you do that for?
Well, I wasn't in New York City. I was with New York State. I actually started out in New York State Corrections and then kind of like went out from there, investigations and training and all that stuff. But I started that in 1981, and I did that for 27 years.
Wow.
At the end of my career, I was in charge of, I was a lead instructor for training for the whole southern tier of the state of New York.
That's awesome. You're a bad man, you know. I see you like adventure.
I just needed a job. I needed a job.
Yeah, you're a German junkie, you know. You need the excitement. Chris, go ask your question before I ask another question.
Okay. My next question is, I understand that you help actors, like you help actors train guns in movies and stuff. So what is like the first thing you tell them before you hand over the gun for like a scene in a movie?
Oh, that's important. Like I am, I'm a certified armorer. And let me just add this in because I'm a certified armorer, not in the way that the motion pictures use the terminology, I'm actually factory trained by gun manufacturers, you know, so that is the proper term armor. And, but by me also being a trainer, firearms instructor, you know, so what I do when start training actors is I'm very safety conscious, number one. And, like, for example, if we're on a set, if I don't have time to actually go through a whole training cycle, because sometimes, depending on the budget of the project, I may have to do things right then and there impromptu. But, you know, first thing I show them that they're using a safe weapon, that nothing, you know, make sure that nothing is, is not loaded. If it doesn't call for blanks or something like that, I don't use them at all. if it calls for that, then I do. But I don't hand that to the actor until it's time to actually shoot. And then it's like I'm the one who handles it, puts it in. If it's a holster situation, I put it in the holster myself to make sure. Because unfortunately, people who are not, you know, used to being around firearms, whether even though they're not real, the ones aren't real that I use, however, they want to play with them because they look real, they feel real, you know, they do certain things, and people want to play with them, you know, and I had to learn that lesson very early in, you know, that career in the movie industry. It's like, you know, I handed an actor a handgun one time, and I'm like, okay, here it is, not loaded, yada, yada, yada. Okay, getting ready to set up so we can run rehearsal through the scene. I turn my back to deal with the other actor, and next thing I hear, click, 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 click. He's pulling the trigger. Oh, this is so cool. I'm like, yo, what are you doing? You know, luckily it wasn't something that, yeah, you know. So it's like that made me even more, you know, conscious about let me stay on top of this and make sure I don't have any accidents or anything like that. And you know what? You know, for the, like, 15 years I've been doing it, you know, knock on wood, you know, haven't had an incident, even when I'm using things like blanks, you know, because people don't think that, oh, it's a blank, it can't hurt you, but they really can. You know, they definitely can't hurt you. And, you know, the thing is like, you know, there's certain standards that are set up in SAG and other, you know, organizations for safety. You know, even when there's a quote-unquote shootout at in a television show or a movie, you see two people shoot. But if you look at it, you think about it, you'll see a wide-angle shot where you'll see them both, but they're actually not even pointing those guns at each other. They're actually off on angles, but you can't tell. Because if it's going to be using blanks, you know, it does spit out a wadding. They spit out some powder. And they spit out, you know, a flash of, you know, spark. So we want to make sure that everybody is safe, you know, when you're doing that. And that's just, you know, one of the aspects of it.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. How did you jump from being a cop to the film industry and being an armorer? I mean, that just seems so, you know, different. I mean, did you ever have, you know, the idea of wanting to be in the film industry, or just how did you make that connection?
Well, you know, it kind of, it almost came like it started out as a dare, actually. Because, you know, like, all right, anything that you do as a profession, all right, you see them on, see it on television or in a movie, and you see things that are wrong. And, you know, me and, you know, the guys that worked with me, we would be sitting around trying to be talking about different things. But you see how that guy's carrying that gun? Nobody carries a gun like that. Nobody wears a holster like that. You know, and it was one of those kind of deals. And it was like, well, you know, you got such a problem with it. Why don't you do something about it? I said, maybe one day I will, you know. And I happened to be working at a range while I was still active. I used to teach security in the evenings, so I'm working at a range, and this range, a television show came in, and they wanted to shoot scenes at this range, but they needed someone, an armorer, for safety while they did this. So, of course, there I am. I'm like, okay. So I worked for a hot, half hour, 40 minutes tops, and they handed me this really nice check. I had, you know, some money on it. I'm like, whoa, okay, I need to pay for this? Wow, okay.
Yes, make your jaw drop.
Then I just started, I started pursuing it, and after I retired, you know, I kept pursuing it even more and then started making some connections, started going to different expos and, you know, industry kind of events and, you know, throwing my card out and meeting people and talking to people. And I did have a friend who was a martial artist and an actor. And I worked on his project. And then he introduced me to some others. And it just started mushrooming because of, you know, first started out word of mouth. And it actually grew from there, and it was fun.
Well, Naquan, I know that not only were you an armorer, you're currently, you know, an actor as well, and you have been around a lot of movie stars, and I'm going to take a small break and be back in two and two, and we're going to discuss those movie stars you've been with and just what's it like, you know, to be around the celebrities, you know, for somebody who can't get that close. So stay with us. We'll be back in two and two. And if you've got a question of our guests, hit the one key and let me know you've got your hand up and dial 347-945-6003 and stand by. We'll be right back in two and two. Michael Ward. And I just want to say again, for everyone who's listening north to south and east to west and everyone in the country around the globe who tunes in. Thank you for your support. We appreciate you. If anybody got a question for our guest, Naquan Murphy, hit the one key and I'll know that your hand is up. Otherwise, you'll stay muted. Oh, okay, you got two questions right here. Well, let me start with the first caller's hands up. Caller, your last four digits of your number is 6996. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing? I'm also a karate instructor. I'm also a former retired law enforcement officer. And I have a question for Daisuke Murphy. I wanted to know if the roles that he plays in the movies have any impact from what he had to go through when he was actually a correction officer. And we know that being in corrections is not an easy feat by any means necessary. So I want to know what impact did that have on him in terms of doing the stuff that he's doing now?
Good question.
That's good. Good question. You know, the thing is that authenticity. I'm a big advocate of authenticity, you know, because there's too many, you know, things that is just fantasized in terms of how they deal in, like, prisons and all this stuff. Because I sit there and, you know, and there was a television show that used to be on HBO. I hated it. I hated it with a passion. And I know some of the people who worked on that show. The show was called Oz. Because it, you know, I remember I was at a function one time, and someone found out that I worked in corrections, and they said, oh, do you watch Oz? That's so real. And I looked at the person and said, oh, you're a correction officer? And she said, no. I said, oh, you were an inmate. You've been in prison? Well, no. I said, so how do you know how real it is? Because it's not. It's really fantasy. Yeah, they take some of the bad parts of it. They took some of the bad parts of it. You know, the stuff that, you know, generally known, the violent parts of it. But it really, you know, it used to drive me crazy to watch it because there's so much they left out that wasn't part of it, you know. And if I tell people, there was two movies that I would always actually recommend to people. They wanted to know the closest they can get to what goes on in corrections, and that's just on both sides. One was An Innocent Man with Tom Selleck. I watched that movie. And the person I was with, I was telling them when I saw things going on, I told them what was going to happen before it happened. That's how realistic it was. And they said to me, well, how did you saw this before? I go, nope. I said, they got it right. You know, they got it right. The other movie is American Me with Edward James Olmos. You know, so, you know, I like things that look authentic, you know. Even, you know, things in terms of, you know, investigations and handling of weapons and so forth. I mean, to me, it's got to make sense. That's what I tell everybody when I'm working on a set and they come up with an idea or something in the script says, oh, we want to do this or that. And I go, yeah, but that don't make sense. And here's why. And I don't just say it, but I tell them why it don't make sense. And then I give them an alternative to allow them to adjust. And, you know, pretty knock on wood, it's all worked out. You know, it's all worked out well. I mean, I have to sometimes bite the bullet and let them have their way. I have to, you know, sometimes I got to do that. But more times than not, I kind of get my way because it makes sense and it makes them look more authentic. That's what
I want. Well, you have another caller that had their hand up. I'm going to unmute their mic, and their last four digits are 7477. Caller, are you still there?
Yes. He really asked my question already, but I'm really enjoying what I'm hearing of the show. And I just want to know, I do want to know, did you ever always, was it always a dream of yours to be on in movies?
No. It's a good question. I'm going to tell you, it's a very good question. Because, no, the one thing I didn't want to do was I did not want to act. I did not. I just wanted to be behind the cameras, you know, doing my thing that way. But I kept getting drawn because if I'm consulting on something and I say, okay, no, a cop wouldn't do this or he wouldn't do that, and then they'd be like, okay, well, why don't you show him? And I'll do it. And I'm like, you know what? You'll do this thing. So I'll get, like, cameos and stuff, you know, but that's as far as it went for the most part. Until the current production company that I work with, Rollo Robinson Productions, when I first met them, they're in the Philadelphia area. When I went with them as an armorer to supply with weapons and, you know, do consulting work, the executive producer, Rollo Robinson himself, we're talking, having a conversation, and all of a sudden he goes, you know what? I'm going to write a part for you in this show, because it was a television show. It's, you know, you'll be seeing it soon, called Brotherhood of Silver. And he actually said, I'm going to give you a part in this show. And I looked at him and I said, no, I don't want to act. He goes, no. You're going to do it. I said, no, I don't act. No. Because I will say this. You know, he formulated a character that was something or somebody that I can relate to. So a lot of the times it was very easy because I was just being myself almost, or being someone that I knew personally, you know. And
that leads me to a question.
That's why I'm doing it. Huh?
Yes. Well, Nicole, when someone gives you a script, do you have leeway to embellish or improvise? Or you have to go verbatim of what's there for you to read.
It varies. A lot of times, you know, if I see the dialogue and the direction of the dialogue is going, and I'll say to to the director, the producer, somebody like that, you know, I'll say, listen, I wouldn't say this, not like this. He'll say it like this. You know, or this will be the reaction. And they'll go, okay, let's try it. And, you know, so it goes both ways. You know, you get some people who are, like, locked in because they want, but, you know, if you are going for, you know, a particular thing, you want to make sure that, you know, if it's in my wheelhouse, if you will, I want to make sure that, okay, you're saying that wrong. Say it like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put this kind of emphasis on that. You know,
mm-hmm.
So a lot of times, you know, it gets embraced because it makes sense. Like I said, my favorite thing, it has to make sense. And, a few times, the worst part about it, I gotta admit, you know, for me, was that, you know, how should I say, you know, in law enforcement, you have some really flavorful vocabulary. And sometimes I get in the moment. I'm getting in the moment. And I'll throw something out there, and it's like, you know, Rob, yeah, you go, whoa, this is PG. We don't do that. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, but I would feel it so much. I would be in the feeling of it because it's working, and I just, like, let go. And it's like, we can't do that. Don't do that. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Well, then that's like the movie R, instead of PG. I mean, that's being authentic.
You know, hey, listen, you know, some things are television, some things, you know, you gotta learn to play with it, you know, the right way. But, you know, can't have a potty mouth all the time. But, you know, hey, it was, but that just shows, like, when the dialogue is working for me, you know, I go in, you know, I really go in on it.
Right.
But it's become a fun thing to do. I'm not super fanatical about it. But, you know, I will do it. I will do it. And, I have fun with it, you know.
Okay,
Chris
has a question, and I want him to ask this question before we run out of time. We got maybe 10 minutes on the clock.
Yeah, Naquan, my question is, you've done so many things in your career, and you're still doing things. So, you know, down the road, many years down the road, what do you want your legacy to be?
That's an interesting question. I really never thought about it. You know, honestly, one of the things I guess is that whoever comes behind me, whether it be family, you know, friends or so forth, you know, or even people that I've taught and mentored over the years, I think I want, if nothing else, just to set a blueprint, you know, for things and how they can, you know, people to never chase dreams, not to chase or go after goals that they have, you know, to go ahead and do that because, you know, it's, life is short, you know, and the whole thing is that it's really good if I can get one person to say, you know what, he did it right. Let me try it that way. No matter what they're doing, then I think I've accomplished something, you know. And I have children, I have grandchildren, and I, you know, always try to inspire them and show them. Listen, I'll take them with me to places just so they can see, you know how hard it is for me to do certain things, you know, the challenges I have, but the fact that I, you know, can still do it. I mean, my kids have gotten to the point where they were like, you know what, you know, you said you're going to do this, you did it. Okay, you know, now what next? You know, it was like kind of like a running joke because I've never been the type to just sit there and like, okay, I'm in a comfortable place, let me stay here. Nah, challenge. Challenge is always the thing for me. I need a challenge.
Exactly, and I like the fact you're talking about leaving a blueprint for whoever's coming behind you so you know how to do things opposed to reinventing the wheel. They just followed the blueprint because a lot of times we make things hard on ourselves. But this question I have to ask is about getting paid as an actor. Now, when you first starting out, I can understand what is to be the normal amount to expect in a paycheck so you know that you're not getting ripped off?
Well, that all depends on a couple of things. That depends on if you're in SAG or not, or you're within that reach of SAG. A lot of times, for me, my salary was usually because I would be pulling double duty. So I'll be, you know, the armorer, you know, and consultant, and then also acting. So I kind of like, mine gets kind of lumped in there. But, you know, let's put it this way. You know, it's been pretty comfortable. Not in the beginning, but, you know, as things progress, yeah, it's pretty comfortable. You know, I've even worked with, like if I've had, like, a film student a couple times who reached out to me because they might have took one of my seminars at an expo or something, and they're like, well, you know, I'm doing this film short, yada, yada, yada. I don't really have, a budget. I have only a couple dollars kind of going. You know, mom gave me $500 and this one there, and we're just trying to get things going on. And I go, okay. And, you know, but I know you're not going to want to work with us. I'm like, why not? Just ask me. Will you work with us? Yeah. I'm not going to open up the vault, but I'm going to give you something good that'll fit what you want. And they go, well, we can't pay you. I says, okay, fine. I said, you're going to have snacks? Got coffee? Make sure I got coffee. You make sure I got coffee? make sure that my name goes in it.
Yeah,
that's right. Well,
that same person might one day be the next Steven Spielberg, and they remember me as helping them out and give me
exactly
a job with Big Chat. So, hey.
Exactly. You know, you're talking about Steven Spielberg. I wanted to ask you about some of the actors and actors that you have been exposed to because of the film industry. Do you know anybody that I probably would know, or any movies that we can relate to? And how are they, you know, when you working with them, you know, are they easy going, or are they, you know, all tensed up or acting like, I'm the actor, I'm the lead role, you know, you can't get close to me. You know, are they acting like they're normal or what?
You know what? I've met actors who were in both realms, where it's like, you know, don't talk to me. And then I've met those who are like, you know, like very embrace, you know, abrasive, and, you know, in other words, they embrace people and they're like, hey, yeah, and, you know, really chop it up and have a good time, you know. So I've met them on both sides, and I've even, you know, I mean, I've worked with actors and I've trained actors, some of the extras that work, and for example, work on Blue Bloods. I've worked with actors on Law and Order. I've worked with actors, you know, on different things, you know, on different television shows. I've worked with rappers, you know. Be surprised. I mean, you know, see some of these rap videos, and they want guns. So, you know what? Okay, I'm your guy. I gave you an example. The brother, Imam Trumpet, who was the retired basketball player. He's married to Tiana Taylor. He just won Dancing with the Stars. He won Dancing with the Stars. Well, his music video, Hello, I supplied all the weapons for that.
Well,
you know,
let me just say this, McQuan. I still have a lot of callers on the line, and we're running out of time. If you want to ask our guest a question, please hit the 1 key, and I'll open up your mic. Otherwise, you stay muted, because I want you to get your question in before it's too late. But really quick, what do you think about that Baldwin situation? Who was really to blame in that whole fiasco?
Well,
when the lady died.
Without being there, but with what I've seen and heard from the media, that armorer dropped the ball big time. She dropped the ball big time. She had no reason, she had no business handling a production like that, and she didn't know what she was doing. Now, because I give you an example, you don't leave weapons out on a cart so anybody can just touch them. That's one. Two, you don't, you know, when I'm on a production, when a weapon has to be on set, it's me or my assistant only that handles that weapon, not the assistant director or producer. It's me or my assistant. We handle that, okay?
Right.
When I'm offset, we handle that. We're standing right there. You know, now, I tell you, one of the biggest problems of that situation was, I don't know who Mr. Baldwin's legal team was, but he just kept running his mouth and digging himself into a hole. Every time he opened his mouth, he dug himself into a deeper hole.
Well,
you know, but that armor, ultimately, that armor, she dropped the ball big time. She didn't do her job.
Well, I just need to say this, Mr. Laquan Murphy, thank you so much for being here this weekend. Next weekend, we're going to have a psychic on, and I want you to tune in for that, because we are running out of time. We're down to a minute. So I appreciate you. Anytime you want to come back on, you can, because this is home for you. And anybody who want to talk about their personal situation, just call me. Call my cell at 443-956-8753, and I'll get you up on the air. And so on that, I'm ending the show with Cisco Incomplete. Y'all have a great weekend. Take care, everybody. Thank you, Ms. Murphy. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you,
Colin Blood. Oh, yeah. Bright lights, fancy restaurants. Everything in this world that I make one. Got a bank account bigger than the law should allow. Feeling lonely now. Covers of the magazines, from their covers to my covers, wanna lay with me. Fame and fortune still a sign, just a woman running out of time. Even though it seems I have everything, I don't want to be alone. Therefore, all of the women, all of your sympathies, all of the money don't amount to you. I can make believe I have everything, but I can't pretend that I don't see that with. My life.